Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
It's the State of Combat podcast on CBS Sports, your home for all things combat audio. And right here, right now, mixed martial arts edition, deep in your ear hole, getting you fired up with that one and only performance enhancing audio. The Brian Campbell, the voice that you hear. I'm off the plane. I'm back from Vegas trying to brush off the jet lag, all the grime, all the moral corruption going on in that city, but we also saw some great fights from UFC 245. We're going to jump into that and so much more. Preview the weekend to come, the last UFC card of the year from Busan, South Korea, a doubleheader for Bellator in Hawaii as well. And joining me to mash all of this up is the man with the most sculpted abs in South Florida. He's the former UFC light heavyweight champion, earthquake survivor, and Hall of Famer extraordinaire, Sugar Rashad Evans. Yeah, man.
What's going on, BC? Hey, your titles for me every time gets better and better. I look forward every week for you for a new title to be added. The best abs in Florida now.
I like that. Take that. Our cohort, Brandon Wise, on a bye week this week. I wonder how he's doing with this Connecticut cold, Rashad. You know, you got to wonder at this point.
Well, I want to tell you, I don't imagine well, especially, I mean, it's pretty cold and it's very nice out here. I'm sure he's missing South Florida a lot right now.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. We got a lot to get into today. Big wins at you. Big card. Big ass card, UFC 245. You were there for ESPN? Is that a true fact?
Yes, sir.
Up
on the cans.
That's two in a row for Big Rashad. How's the broadcasting life going for you?
It's going pretty good. I'm getting my broadcasting legs under me. I'm knocking out the stutters. I'm getting more fluid, you know, with my talk. I enjoy it.
All right. Did you spend the night helping Colby's jaw get back together in one piece? No, come on. There's no time for that. We don't have that. All right. We got a lot coming your way, folks. Reminder, it's the holiday season, so I don't care what you celebrate. Why don't you celebrate with us by giving us that gift of your 5-star review at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download fine audio. Thank you. Okay. We want to give you all these great episodes. Give back a little bit this year. Do us that solid. Next week is Christmas week. A lot of people be celebrating. We'll be hitting you up with a year ending awards edition at some day, at some form. So be on the lookout for that. But today it's your boy BC. It's Rashad. We're going to break it all down. A lot to dive into on the fallout of UFC 245. Big news in the past few minutes as well. Rory McDonald has a new home. We're going to get to all of that and then some right after we stop and pause for a word from our friends and sponsors. Yeah, dig it.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am ready.
Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
And we're back. BC, Rashad, the Sugar Man, back at it, ready to go. Rashad, I don't want to waste any more time of our listeners, quality time here, whether they're, you know, in the car on the way to the grocery store here. Who's the damn MVP from UFC 245 in Las Vegas? Both of us were there on the ground. This was a wild night of fights that entertained me, got me fired up. Who's the big winner in your eyes?
I got to go with Usman. Usman has to be the big winner. I mean, to come out of that beef the way he did and to come out and finish the fight. Not only just beat him, but to finish the fight against a very game, a very tough Colby Covington. It was that was an MVP performance to me.
This was a very, very interesting fight. A sneaky fight of the year contender from the standpoint of it was nearly 25 minutes of just straight action. But my shocker, Rashad, was that it was 25 minutes of straight boxing. And it was basically two guys saying, I think I'm tougher. I think my gas tank's a little bit better. I think I can strike a little bit better. So why don't we just, you know, run into each other for five rounds and see who's the last man standing. To what you said, Kamaru Usman proved a lot. I thought he landed the bigger shots. I thought overall performed slightly better, although I'm here to tell you Colby Covington did show me a hell of a lot of toughness. But talk to me. I know you're close with Kamaru. Was that a decision you think both guys made before the fight even started? That I know we're both wrestlers, but forget about it canceling out. This is a grudge war. This is just about punching you in the damn mouth.
Yeah, I think both of those guys, you know, here's the reality. You know, a wrestling match is only 6 minutes, maybe 7 minutes at the most. You know what I'm saying? Depends on where you're wrestling at. And there's a reason for that, because you can't wrestle longer than that effectively and have proper motor function and move properly if you're going to wrestle longer than that. You can't wrestle that high of a pace for that long. And these guys are fighting for 25 minutes. So at that point, they're like thinking, you know what? I can go out here and I probably can take them down. I probably get one takedown. But it's going to be a fight. And I don't know how I'm going to be when I get back up to my feet, because at that point, you're going to be in an energy deficit. So I think the whole not wanting to wrestle or not going to the wrestle for both of them was a decision that they made because it was about energy preservation and how they were going to use that energy more effective. I think that if they would have seen an opportunistic takedown, each of them would have took it. But for the most part, when it came to earning it and putting a guy against a cage and grinding out a very hard takedown, that was going to be a hard takedown because both of these guys use technically the same formula to get the guy down on the ground. So they know what they look for when they take a guy down. So they know what to defend. So that would have been a very, very hard takedown. So I think it was just an economical fight by both of them.
Economical, but high freaking pace the whole damn time. I was wondering, is somebody going to gas here? And we really never saw that. And there were periods, at least three of those first four rounds were just insane pace. I mean, just like trying to keep up me doing a cage side play-by-play at CBSSports.com. It's just like lead left hand, uppercut, right hand, jab. Right. It was just madness. Seriously, how much respect do you have both of these guys to be able to put on that fight that they did? Because, you know, I wouldn't have guessed it went exactly just like that, but it was damn good theater.
I have a lot of respect for both of those guys because I know what it's like to put your foot on the line and go in there with a guy that you have that much animosity for. Just the animosity alone for it can wind you. You know, walk into the cage, I'm out of breath already. Just because the excitement of what you're about to do and who you're about to fight and all the talk that went into it can do that. It happened to me when I fought Rampage. It happened to me when I fought John Jones. There's always that minute where you got to take a minute to exhale and be like, okay, this is just a fight. Now I got to get into my X's and O's, and this is about me executing my technique. You know, and that's when you start to settle into the fight. And both of those guys did that relatively early. And I was really surprised because, you know, I felt that when they met into the center of the octagon in the beginning of the fight, when they didn't shake hands or dap up, I just felt like they were coming out with that same energy. And even in between every single round that they got done from beating the stuffing out of each other, they still had something to jaw at each other about. It was amazing.
I saw from my own eyes, and from, you know this from having great seats at many fights, sometimes you can see things so much better cage side than you can on TV. Sometimes you end up missing stuff because of the angles, the cameraman in the corner, all that stuff. I saw with my own eyes two moments where I thought Colby got rocked by big right hands. And I think for the most part, I would have been fine if this went to the scorecards, scoring this 4-1 or 3-2 for Usman if it ended up getting there, because I thought the striking was fairly even in terms of volume, in terms of accuracy and combinations. I just thought Kamaru was landing the bigger shots throughout. Did you have that same feeling?
Yeah, he was, and his pressure that he was put into, you know, I think that was the biggest difference. You know, Colby doesn't necessarily fight well going backwards, and sometimes when he was going back, that's when Kamaru was pretty much running it on him, and it was that jab that was leading leading the way. You know, he was getting behind a jab, and it was really having this effect on the whole right side of Colby's face. You know, it was starting to swell up substantially, and that was when Kamaru was getting behind it, but with the pressure on top of it. But, you know, Kamaru did allow Colby to get in there, because sometimes, you know, it seemed like he would just take a break behind a jab, meaning the fact that he wasn't throwing. He would go to the body, he'll go jab, then he'll go to the body, but then he wasn't coming back with nothing to the head. And he did that too many times in a row. And then Colby started to counter that and started going to his head. And it was amazing.
It really was. I wonder if there were moments where, because this happened to us as fans and journalists, where, you know, if you told me ahead of time, there's going to be a 5-round boxing match for the most part. There was some kicking, some leg kicking, not really much. There was some good body kicks from Colby. No, nothing too serious, though. Basically a boxing match. I would have guessed that Kamaru knocked him out. And now, in the end, he did, right? But look, he knocked him out in the final minute of a thrilling bout. I never would have thought that Colby had, well, certainly that elite level toughness to be able to go through a broken jaw in round three, his face grotesquely swollen, really bad cut under his eye, and yet at the time of the stoppage with 50 seconds to go in the fifth round, he wanted more. He was upset about it. You know, he ran out of the cage, which, by the way, is on brand. I'm not necessarily against that for the sort of dick character that he plays, but I wonder if there was any points for Kamaru, and I wondered if you thought this while watching this, where he's just like, oh man, this guy Colby maybe is everything he said he was from the standpoint of toughness and gas tank, because there was not a second that he backed down or took a step backwards.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, to your assessment, I thought the same thing. You know, I thought that this fight was going to come down to who had the most dog in him. And I thought for sure that Kamaru had dog in him. But I honestly would say this. I kind of felt as if, like, Colby has a little bit of pretend dog in him. That's what I felt like before the fight, because I felt as if, like, Colby is an awesome competitor. And sometimes you see these competitors come into the sport and they do really well because they're good competitors. Now, there's a difference between competing and fighting. You know what I'm saying? When you're a competitor, you know, that's more of like a momentum type thing. You know, you have when things are going your way, you can seize the opportunities and you compete well. But the fight comes in there when you have to go in a situation where your back's against the wall and you're kind of getting your butt kicked in a fight, and you find a way to get, like, you can find that dog in you. And I didn't think that Colby had that. But when he sat on that stool and said, "My jaw's broke," I was like, okay, he's about to quit. And then he came out. And then he got tougher and tougher. I was like, oh, this guy got some dog in him. So I was tremendously impressed with that. But I was also impressed with the fact that Kamaru didn't relent. He didn't say, oh, wow, this guy's not fading. Maybe, you know, and start getting insecure in himself. He just kept, okay, I'm going to keep chipping away. And that's what he did.
Yeah, and I got the feeling that they will see each other again in a fight. I also felt like Colby was absolutely, you know, elevated from this defeat, from the way he handled it, toughness and all that. If you're the matchmakers, though, if you're in that room, two doors down from Dana's office there in that PI, and it's the draft board room, and they got all the rankings and all, and that's when they're hashing out the next big fight. I made this case in the instant analysis pod late Saturday. I mean, it's Usman Masvidal or it's nothing from my point of view. Where do you stand on where Kamaru should and maybe will go next?
I'm with you as well, too. I'm with you as well. You know, I think that is the fight to make. If you're, you know, Masvidal, he's got the hottest hand right now besides Kamaru, you know, and, you know, he's been able to capture people's minds and their imagination with the way his fighting style and just his overall, you know, candor. You know, he's just been very just somebody you want to give an opportunity to. So I think him. And Kamaru is a perfect match. And then, you know, allow Colby to go and lick his wounds and fight his way back. And I think that, you know, in a couple fights, you know, we may see this again. We may see Colby lining up to fight Kamaru again. And, you know, by that time, the pitch of Colby should be back to where we're used to hearing it. You know what I'm saying? Because he should have established the confidence back into his game with two of those fights. So It's the 170 weight class is looking the best it's looking in a long time.
It is. When you add that element of the BMF and the whole floater thing of guys that kind of can make lightweight or welterweight for a big fight, you have a lot of potential for fun matchups. I mean, you know, we talk about Colby being elevated. Like, I legitimately thought when Colby finally loses that it would be like the end of the myth. Now, in hindsight, it's not really the smartest theory because, you know, Colby's a great wrestler. He's proving time and again that he's elite. Like, I wouldn't have guessed that he would have beaten Maya or RDA or Robbie Lawler. So he's showing you each step. I just thought when he finally lost, it would be spectacular. It would be like soul crushing. It would be almost like, okay, now back down to the contenders period. But suddenly by the way he fought, I don't know which direction he goes next. Probably more likely he goes back to the drawing board, faces somebody coming off a defeat, gets back in the title picture. But if you wanted to just use his brand and make the McGregor level, the Diaz brother level fights that are just like, oh, let's put two guys together who can talk and love to fight and let's do this, I think he's in that class now. Now, the numbers would have to back him up, and we don't really get access to the pay-per-view numbers these days under the new ESPN deal. But I just think when you go and look like YouTube views for the countdown shows, the ones with Colby dominated anything else this weekend.
Yeah, and that just shows, you know, Colby is definitely must-see TV. And to your point, I felt the same way. I felt like after he got this fight and he got exposed a little bit, it would just expose him in general. But, it you know, to the contrary, it actually, you know, showed that he is everything that he says he is competitively, and probably even more than he says competitively, because competitively speaking, you know, he doesn't really talk about how dope, how good he is on that level. He just talks nonsense. You know what I'm saying? But I think that, you know, all his shenanigans outside the cage, people can, you know, like, okay. I mean, he talks crazy, but you cannot deny the fact that this boy has a lot of squabble in him, a lot.
All right, I'm going to ask you a loaded question. You train with Kamaru, you're friends with him, but you know this game. What does this do to his pound-for-pound ranking? Where is he carving himself out now? You know, personally for me, I still like Khabib at one, John Jones at two. I've had Max Holloway up high for a long time. We're going to be talking about his defeat in a second. Where are you sliding Usman in there in comparison to the best in the game right now?
Man, I would put him at least... I got him at least in my top five, top three right now, just because of the fact that, you know, he's got what, 11 wins in a row, you know, and he's, you know, he's looking dominating in every single performance that we've seen him in. You know, this fight was the first fight that we've seen him lose a round. And, you know, I mean, that's hard considering the landscape that he's in right now. So, I definitely think you have to put him in that pound for pound within the top five. You know, it can either be, you know, Khabib, John Jones, you know, Kamaru, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you got Cejudo's lingering right around there. You know, I think sometimes people overrate heavyweights and put Stipe up a little too high, but he's certainly in that picture. Adesanya, I think, is right in my top five. Kamaru belongs with those guys. It's just absolutely agree. It's legit.
Yeah.
He's number 8 on the UFC's pound for pound, but that's a little weird. Not only do they have women in there, but I don't know who's doing these UFC rankings. I usually have
many issues. Weird that they have the women in there. I mean, listen, we all play in the same sport, but at the end of the day, this is the only sport that they do that with.
Yeah, that is bizarre there. But rolling forward to this co-main event from UFC 245, I talked big on this last week because I had a one-on-one with Alexander Volkanovsky, who wins the featherweight title, ending that epic 14-fight win streak in the division for Max Holloway. I had a one-on-one at Media Day, Rashad, with Alexander Volkanovsky, and I've never been so wowed by somebody's confidence. Now, I've interviewed a million boxers and MMA guys ahead of a big fight, right? And there's times when people are just balls out confidence. Like, you know, I remember Robert Guerrero telling me he's going to knock Floyd Mayweather out, and me having to go like, now I know in my head he has no chance, but he sounds pretty damn confident right here. This was a different level of confidence because Volkanovski told me how he was going to beat Max, told me that he has an IQ like nobody else in the sport, told me that he, like Luke Thomas uses the word audit, that he basically has broken down every inch of Max's game ahead of time and knows exactly what he's going to do to neutralize him in ways that nobody else at 145 has been able to do. And then he went out there and did it exactly like he told me. And it's weird, Rashad, because when he beat Jose Aldo, I was almost questioned afterwards, like, did Jose quit, man? He wasn't even trying. What a crap performance. Then to hear Volkanovski tell my casual eyes or my ears, no, dude, I took away every single thing that he normally does and left him without an answer. Is this guy some kind of wizard, Rashad? What the heck's going on here? This was a monster breakout performance. Like, a, I thought he was this level good. No. He's a friggin' amazing.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way, actually. You know, I was feeling the same way because I was looking at his interviews and I was seeing how confident he was. And I watched a lot of his fights, but I just couldn't see it. I just couldn't see why he was so confident. Not saying that he didn't have the tools to beat Max, but what I didn't see was this right here. You know, he didn't have a strong lead hand. He didn't have a strong jab hand. You know, he does have an active left kick. He can throw it high. He can throw it inside left kick. But it to me, that wasn't enough to be able to keep Max at bay. You know, I felt as if he needed to have more. Then he came with that outside leg kick, and that completely changed everything. That outside leg kick, that right outside leg kick. Once he ate that right, the left side kick of Max, it completely took away Max's striking game. Max was no longer able to move forward with his, you know, his progression of punches. He had to go to his other side, and his other side, although it is pretty clean, it is technically good, but it's not what the other side is.
Right.
You know, and you got to really see that he had a really hard time of finding that rhythm, of fighting that pace, going from that southpaw stance. And that was all due to those leg kicks that Volkanovski landed early. And then at that point, he was able to just find his shots and pretty much control the pace of Max. And that wowed me because that showed, like you said, that IQ.
And it's crazy because if I ever imagine somebody beating Max, you're always thinking, okay, it's going to have to be a slugger that knocks him out. But, oh, here's the problem. Max has, like, you know, an elite level, all-time great chin, and he always shows it. Number two, you're like, okay, well, maybe if somebody can finally take him down. Well, nobody takes down Max Holloway, not even Volkanovski in this fight. And then you're like, three, all right, somebody's just got to out-max Max one day. Come out there and just throw volume, control distance, do all this stuff. He didn't do any of that necessarily. He did a little bit of some of those elements, but I just never would have imagined because of how smart Max is. Because Max is legitimate, pound-for-pound, 28 years old, building an all-time great resume. And it's not just the speed or the power. Like, Max is a complete champion that one day when he walks away, we're going to be like, man, we watched someone special in this era. So I never would have guessed, Rashad, that there was going to be someone who comes along that can beat him by rewiring the computer, by short-circuiting him, by essentially... Now, look, I had that front row seat, so you're below the fighting surface, and I was really able to pick up on some of the visuals on the angles of just how well Volkanovski was doing to control distance and feinting. And nobody controls distance on Max Holloway. That's what he does, right? And I think some of it was, you know, Volkanovski had a sneaky long reach, 2.5 inches longer than Holloway, but it was that constant feinting and footwork. Like you said, you know he's good, but can he do that to a reigning champion who's one of the three best fighters in the whole damn sport? I didn't think it was going to be able to work that good, but it's showing me that, you know, I always wonder, Rashad, we're 25 years into the sport, right? But, like, most of those years are archaic. Most of those years are like, you know, kick you in the face, knock people's teeth out, Hoist Gracie, the only guy that really knows what he's doing. And then you had the wrestling era. And now we finally have mixed martial artists. I didn't think there was going to be a new level of evolution, or at least not for a while. And I just saw things on Saturday in this fight that I hadn't picked up on before in the true science of this fight game, and to see it done at the very elite level. And again, it's not like Volkanovski hurt Max. It's not like he dominated him 5-0, although one of the judges did have it that way. This was a relatively close and competitive fight because Max made excellent adjustments and went southpaw and had some good moments. But with all that said, I just didn't think he would be able to do this. And it was like the ease and the calm that he had in doing it was no different than the ease and the calm in the interview I had with him, where he's like, yeah, man, I'm going to win this. You're going to see. They're not ready for this style. So is this just like a new generation of smart people down there in Australia or New Zealand? Or I mean, you know, you see analytics come in and change basketball and baseball. are we going into a new chapter here in MMA?
I think so. You know, I think we're moving into the era of the proficient stand up striker. You know, that's able to do everything well to be able to keep the fight where he wants to. And City Boxing does a really, really good job of that, because these guys at City Boxing, their stand up is elite. You know, these guys are you know, dissecting different movements and different nuances in the sport that is yet to still be uncovered by the rest of us, you know. And you can see that with some of the drills that they do. You know, I follow a couple of the guys on social media, just in some of the drills that they do. You know, I don't really see, you know, I've never done those drills before, and they seem fairly new, but they're old striking drills that they've, you know, done for so long back there, you know, and they're, you know, putting a little MMA twist on them. So you're seeing the genius and the brilliance that was in that whole kickboxing era out there in, you know, out there in Australia and New Zealand, starting to play out in the mixed martial arts world.
Very impressive stuff. And I feel like these two will see each other down the road again. And like Max said afterwards, look, you know, I'm 28 years old. I'm going to be back. Like, what do you expect? It is what it is. I lost.
Max is only 28 years old.
It's crazy.
Wow.
It's crazy.
28. That's it.
This is an interesting division too, because it's like, man, I'd love to see Volkanovski against Ortega, man. I'd love to see him against, you know, a couple different styles. I don't know if he can do this forever, because people are going to start watching the tape on him. People are going to start to having to evolve. But for right now, he's a damn good fighter. And like I said, coming in, I'm like, okay, he can wrestle. I've seen him with pop, but I've also seen him sort of get hit before by guys. This was just like everything went perfect.
Well, I think the thing is with him, you know, he's coming from that big 210 and 215. And even though he's not that size now, you still remember what it's like to carry on that weight. You still remember what it's like to bump around with guys that size. And for him, in his mind, he feels like these guys are smaller than him, even though he's going to the fight sometimes being the smaller fighter. In his mind's eye, he still views himself as the bigger guy. And he goes out there and he fights like the bigger guy.
That's true. Could you imagine that the chess of him and Zabit for the title? I mean, there's some fun fights you can make here, Rashad.
There's a lot of fun fights.
I want to get your take on Amanda Nunes's bantamweight title defense, unanimous decision over Jermaine Duran to me. I've got nothing but great things to say about the toughness, the survival instincts, the, oh my God, did she just hurt Amanda moments that GDR gave us in this fight, because Jermaine could have crumbled at many points in here. But there was a weird sort of debate that spun out of this, Rashad, where, look, Amanda's amazing. She's the damn goat. She wrestled GDR at will. She made it look like me taking my 11-year-old kids down to the ground. But did she play it safe? And if the answer is yes, are you okay with her just saying, look, I can't lose the fight if I keep doing this way. I don't need to get up kicked out of nowhere and get knocked cold and lose everything. How did you sort of gauge those last 2.5 rounds when Amanda got booed and she was just sort of fine with top position? Let's go to the scorecards.
At that moment, I realized at that moment that GDR had achieved her goal, which is, make Amanda Nunes respect her. And she went out there and she respected her, because for the most part, she rocked Amanda. She rocked Amanda a lot. And she, you know, gave Amanda a lot of pause. Even when she was, when she even had her on the ground, it wasn't like a total, I'm going to completely dominate you on the ground, because sometimes, you know, they were debating even to stand them up. You know, sometimes it was just a lot of stale position where you just seen Amanda, you know, getting her breath, getting her composure. And that let me know that she was in a fight. So do I think she played it safe? Yeah, I think she played it safe, but she had to. You know what I'm saying? She was trying to win the fight. It wasn't like she was so dominant over her that she could afford to fight any other way. You get what I'm saying? She fought the best way that she could to win that fight. If she would have fought any different, then she may have not have won that fight. If she would have got back up to her feet and would have engaged in a striking battle, she would have got caught, because there's something that happened to her when she's doing all that wrestling. She got tired, And Amanda was known for getting tired before, but then you start to see that old, oh, she gets tired, come back into to view. What if she was? What if GDR was a better grappler and was able to get back up to her feet? What if we would have seen then? You know what I'm saying? If she was a better grappler and was able to get back to her feet and was able, and even smarter in a grappling exchange, just to, you know when she had, because there's a couple of times where she got back in a position to neutralize the position, but then she went back in for a shot, and that's just her just not being. Not having that mat time. You know, when you have mat time, you know, okay, I got the distance I want. Now I'm back into my world. Now I can strike. If she would have did that, it would have been interesting to see what happened.
Yeah, and I think you make a great point about the gas tank. Amanda poured out a lot in thinking she had GDR ready to be finished in that first round because she rocked her with a punch, took her down with E, slammed her, and then it was like ground and pound. You're like, oh, man, this was one-sided. This fight's going to be over in a second. And That had to do something to her in terms of like, oh crap, Jermaine's not going away. And then you add in those scary moments. And I remember two quick knees in the clinch, and then that one partial head kick. And Amanda knew looked like she was stumbling. And then that up kick, and then the damn triangle choke attempt.
The triangle choke. Who would even like? Come on! And it almost worked.
It did. I mean, what a performance for Jermaine Duranby. And anyone that's going to argue, you know, Amanda should have given her a chance to win? No, she shouldn't have. I mean, if anything, you're going to say, look, Jermaine's got to be able to stop one takedown, like, you know, to have any argument in this conversation. Like, Amanda knew what she was going to easily win with. She did it. Sometimes that's what the greats do. Do you tell Floyd Mayweather, why are you not knocking these guys out? Why are you just brilliantly outpointing them? No, it's what he does, right? Like, good God, Saturday night, Terrence Crawford, the welterweight champion, got into an unnecessary war, and we're all criticizing him. Would we have said the same if Amanda Nunes just started throwing bombs? I get all that. But it's almost a weird moral victory for GDR in this one.
It really is, man. She went out there and she exceeded my expectations, because honestly speaking, I thought the fact that Amanda Nunes beat her the first time and submitted her within the first round, I thought there's no way that GDR was going to be able to close that gap of understanding of how to even stop a submission. And I thought she was going to find herself right back in that position, because Amanda Nunes is a black belt in jiu-jitsu. And GDR is a blue belt at most, you know, if she's even that, you know what I'm saying? And I don't want to speak, you know, make it seem she's a complete novice, but at the end of the day, you know, she's not what Amanda Nunes is. And here's the thing. There's so many times where people go against somebody who has the ability to take them down and do what Amanda did to her, with the grappling. And they say, you got to work on your takedown defense. I would say, you know what? The takedown defense isn't as important sometimes as the ability to get back up to your feet. You see what I'm saying? I think if anything, when you go against somebody who is that level of wrestling, you know you're going to get taken down at some point. But it's how you work on getting back up to your feet that's going to make the difference in a fight. And I think more focus should have been focused on just getting up to your feet and getting that separation.
Absolutely. Is there anyone outside of a third fight with Shevchenko? And they did ask Valentina on Friday. She was in town for that press conference announcing UFC 247, where she'll be co-maining with John Jones and Dom Reyes in the main event. And she said, look, that fight's inevitable. It will happen. I don't know the time, but the timing will be perfect. Blah, blah, blah. Is there anybody else in the interim? And just to give you an update, Irene Aldana had a KO from hell.
That's Kevin what I was thinking. Yeah.
Viera, where you're just like, holy crap, after losing every second in the first round, that catapulted her name and sort of pushed the unbeaten Ketlin Viera down a notch. Whether it's that, whether it's Aspen Ladders, or anybody you think could or should be next with Amanda where you'd actually be entertained.
I think Aspen Ladd could be somebody very interesting, but I think the Aspen is like one or two fights away from being there mentally speaking, far as having that confidence. You know, I think that she's got some very, very really good stand up. She's got a hard nose to her, but I think that, you know, she's kind of almost too polite in there a little bit. You know what I'm saying? She's almost too polite. I wish that she would be more of an asshole a little bit, just so she can kind of grow into that dog that I see that's in her. It's right beneath the surface, you know?
Well, did you see the coach bring it out of her in her last fight 2 weeks ago? Did you see that in between rounds?
Yeah, I seen it. I seen it. And she came. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. That's what I see Aspen. Like, I can see Aspen Ladd tapping into that more and becoming that force in the weight class. And I think that with a couple fights coming from that place of fighting, I think she definitely can be a contender.
Yeah, that's a fight I want to see. It's like, I agree with you. She almost needs a couple more, but there's no time for a couple more. She's number two at 135. The UFC has still never put out rankings for 145 pounds. I couldn't even tell you another women's featherweight right now who could or should be next. I mean, I'm being ignorant to that, but it's like, I mean, there's just nobody. I'm sure Amanda wants to maybe, defend that 145 belt next, but, wow, it's an interesting time. That's what happens when you destroy people and you clean it out. It's crazy though. If GDR would have won that this weekend, she would have been a two division champion and would have been still a 46-0 retired kickboxer. Like that would have. I don't know if we're ready to live in a world where Jermaine Duranemi is a two-time champion, like two division champion. It would have been wild. It's crazy. All right, we got to roll quickly through a couple other points from this card so we can look ahead on the week to come, but. Talk about moral victories this week, Rashad. Jose Aldo, 135. He's legit. He's friggin' legit. And the comments he's making about, I should have been at this weight class all the time, my whole career. I never had a nutritionist before. I never felt this great. Now, his performance against Marlon Moraes, a disputed split decision loss, really wasn't perfect. He had a lot of issues with Marlon's speed in the first round. But when he made that adjustment and just became the slugger, and when you mix in there his chin and his power at this weight class and his technique, and he's basically just waiting to counter and knock dudes out, this is going to be a fun guy to watch. And no wonder why Henry Cejudo's like, hey, Dana, can I fight Jose next? Like, I want his name in this fight, but that'll also be a fun-ass fight. I don't think he can make it, but what was your thoughts on Jose coming out of this?
I thought he looked phenomenal. I mean, when you cut that amount of weight, and you always worry the fact that, okay, how much weight did he cut? Because at the end of the day, when you cut that amount of weight, you know, you're not going to be able to replenish your body in enough time where you're going to be able to compete at the highest level. Because when you cut that amount of weight, it takes away from the amount of fluid that can go around your brain to absorb a shot, to absorb a punch. So I thought for sure he's not going to be able to make it past the power of Marlon. Even though he may make weight, he may be able in good shape, he's not going to be able to sustain a big blow because the hydration factor. He showed something different. He showed that he was hydrated. He showed that he had more energy. And actually, honestly speaking, it looked as if like Marlon was kind of banking on the fact that he would be in an energy deficit because of the weight that he cut too. And Marlon was a bit surprised the fact that he came out and he was pushing the pace that he did. But that's what I seen from that fight. I seen him just pushing the pace on Marlon. I know how Marlon can fight. I know how Marlon fought under Mark Henry. And maybe that's where I was judging it from, because this was his first fight not being with Mark Henry. And let me tell you the significance of that. The significance of that is the fact that everyone knows that Mark Henry has, or if you don't know, I'm going to tell you now, Mark Henry, he has an extreme play calling or codes that he does for his fighters. So there would be a code that syncs with a punch combination. So it can be like jab, cross, hook, kick, and that'll be, you know, named after Marlon's daughter or another loved one of Marlon that he has in his life or whatever that strikes him. So he has all these codes and he can give a complete combination just by saying one word. So that's a huge line of communication. And all Mark Henry's fighters, they learn to listen to what Mark is saying. We learn it in training because Mark would be like, you know, he'll yell something out and then you just have to know what he's talking about. And that's how he communicates to his fighters. So there's and they had that communication since Marlon came over to New Jersey, and it's something they had to build. So when Marlon didn't have him in his corner, I was kind of nervous that might be an issue. And then when I watched Marlon fight, I felt like it was an issue because what I seen from Marlon, I seen Marlon just very indecisive on what combination or what to throw at a moving forward Jose Aldo. And I was like, damn, he's really missing Mark Henry right now.
Indeed. He scratched a victory that I want to say disputed instead of anything like controversial, because I really felt in the second half of that third round, Jose kind of took his foot off the gas pedal and allowed Marlon to kind of constantly jump in with some sneaky jabs and lead shots. And it just seemed like Jose wasn't closing the show strong enough. And I felt bad for him because I scored it 2-1 for him, but I felt that you could have given it to Marlon. Two of the three judges did. And I really feel like this would have put him right in a title shot because he's that name. He's still 33. He told me, mark my words, I'm going to win a title in this division. Like, I'm going to be the next champion. Him versus Henry Cejudo is suddenly one of the most anticipated fights I would want to make in a division that's overflowing with credible contenders like Petra Jan, who just sent Mr. Faber to hell in the fight before that. So it's wild, man. I don't think Jose is the same guy as Featherweight Destroyer by any means. But in this weight class, with that chin and power, man, and that willingness to fight, he's gonna end some dudes.
He really is. And here's another thing, you know, everyone he has to fight still respects and understand that that's Jose Aldo. You know what I'm saying? He still carries that's Jose Aldo. And you know, he may have had his troubles and you know, consistency winning fights, but the respect is still there. People still respect his name. Contenders still respect him when they got to step on the line to fight that guy. And I think that he's definitely somebody in this weight class to be watched and to be feared. But another thing, I want to talk about this judging that night. I didn't agree with the judging at all. I thought the judging was the worst that has been in a long time.
So for just this fight or in general?
In general, I thought the judging was bad the whole night. Like, even like when Kamaru's fight was, it ended, but the scoring came out, and they had Kamaru, I think, losing a fight.
Yeah, he was up 3-1 on one card. One card was even entering the fifth, and the other card had Colby up 3-1.
Colby up. He was gonna lose. He was gonna lose the fight if it went to judges. That's what it seemed like to me.
It's interesting. It's very interesting what they're seeing. And yeah, there's always been a major problem in scoring in MMA because you're using the old boxing system.
But here's a problem with that judging that night. Every fighter who was fighting and they pushed the action, they weren't rewarded for pushing the action that night. It was a guy on the outside moving and avoiding that got the nod. And it was just perplexing to me because a big part of controlling a fight is controlling where the fight takes place at. If I'm walking you down and I'm controlling where the action takes place, then you have to give me credit for controlling where the action is taking place. You can't give it to the guy who's evading action to not get hit. You know, it's the guy who's, okay, I'm 10 toes down, I'm here. Okay, you're moving, I'm 10 toes down and I'm here. And if I can keep on making you do that, then I'm controlling the octagon.
Yeah, I mean, if you make somebody skip to your loo,
and you will skip to my loo,
then that's the bottom line. I'm that's ring generalship right there. I mean, that's something. I don't feel like these guys know what they should be judging. I really feel like we're in such a, we're lucky there isn't worse issues that break out from that. But Moraes will not get a title shot by any means, having been stopped by Cejudo. This is a big win for him to stay in that picture. But this is a crowded title picture. Aljo's recovering from injury. Petra, Peoche, Peter Jan did really what he was supposed to do. He brutally finished Uriah Faber in round three. Shout out to 40-year-old Uriah Faber for taking an insanely dangerous fight with the hope. And he looked great, by the way, before Jan, really, the youth in power, just started to break him down. He took a fight that could have listed him to a sneaky title shot. I mean, Faber, if he would have got by Jan, we could have been talking about him trying to get that backdoor Bisping legacy of finally securing that title. But he didn't. I feel like it's Peyote Jan's – can I brutal that anymore? How are we supposed to say it, Rashad? Peyote, Peruta, Peter?
Peyote.
It's his time. It's his time. Sanhagen's in this division too. But could you freaking get your mouth watered anymore for Cejudo Jan? I mean, that would be violence.
It would be so violent. And Jan impressed me so much that fight because, you know, he started off really, really slow and very, very patient. And it was like, okay, is he gonna open up, you know, or is he just, you know, you couldn't tell if he was being patient or was it the fact that Uriah was giving him some problems, that was giving him some hard time to kind of sort it through, you know? But by the second round, when you start to see him catch Uriah, you started to see, oh, so he was just waiting for the perfect, you know, like you can see the strategy behind it. And you've seen it was like he was just it seemed to me like he could have took him out anytime that he wanted to. But he was just getting the rounds in. But I mean, I was impressed with Uriah because I felt as if like Uriah, I felt like he had the power and definitely he has those punches that can catch Jan. And I felt at times that he did come close to catching Jan, but, you know, Jan was just, I don't know, you know, just a little bit too strong, I think.
He was. He's sick. And he's a badass. You talk to him, you sense it. And seeing the video afterwards and the tweeting he did at Cody Garbrandt of getting in his face and getting him all wound up. Jan's got that evil side to him, like in a good way. Like this guy could... This guy's championship material. I mean, look, I don't know if he's good enough to beat Cejudo, but that would be fun to watch. And, you know, you look at this division, like I mentioned, Aljo, Sanhagen, Suncio's not going anywhere. Pedro Munho's lingering. You got Aldo now. Faber is still around if you want to make fun old guy fights. Dominic Cruz is not dead, last time I checked. Rob Font rising.
Dominic Cruz is coming back.
I mean, this is, you want to, I mean, Jimmy Rivera's still around. There are, Cody Garbrandt making his comeback fight. Who did he sign with? I forgot that. Did you see who Cody signed to come back with? Cody Garbrandt?
No, I didn't see who's fighting.
I'll have to look that up. There are just a plethora. Oh, he's going to fight Rafael Asunso.
Okay, and it's an exciting fight for Cody because Cody is now training in New Jersey with Mark Henry and those guys. So it'd be good to see how Mark Henry's play calling style works with a guy with hands like Cody Garbrandt.
I really want to see Cody put the train back on the tracks, man. I really want to.
He's one of my favorite strikers in there because the way he throws punches, it reminds me of a Shane Mosley. You know what I'm saying? Like his punching style reminds me of Shane Mosley, and Shane Mosley was one of my favorite boxers.
And who just got the nod to the Hall of Fame for next year, by the way, in a badass class. Juan Manuel Marquez, Bernard Hopkins. That's a bad trio right there. Yeah, Garbrandt, dude, It has fallen apart. He has gotten too willing to brawl, all those things that you can say, but it's like, go back and watch the Dominic Cruz fight. If he can get poised again,
yes.
He's a nasty dude. There's a lot to work with there. I'm hoping he can do it. Big wins for welterweight Jeff Neal. He says he's two or three fights away from a title shot. I might speed that up. I might speed that up because you look really damn good. Look, Mike Perry's a guy that's going to brawl with you, but that was a good-ass win. I want to close by saying, should I be woken up now to featherweight Chase Hooper, this 20-year-old? I knew nothing about this guy coming in. Good Lord, did you see him escape that guillotine and then put it on Daniel Tamer?
My goodness, I was very impressed with that kid, man. I mean, for one, making it through that adversity, you know what I'm saying? And against a guy like Tamer can crack. And the first thing is when you get cracked with a good shot, you're thinking like, oh my gosh, do I really want to do this? But he found a way to get it done and get it done the way that he does it. And he's got some huge upside. He's a big kid. And a kid like that, he's going to grow into his weight class. And, you know, he's not as proficient on his feet, but with size like that, It takes, you know, a few camps to bring him around.
And how about that triangle choke where he's basically sitting on Tamer's neck and just putting some elbows down?
Gosh, that was just vicious.
There was some good instincts that Hooper showed in this whole fight. Very poised, very calm. You know, certainly looks like he doesn't belong in terms of just looks like a floppy-haired kid, yet goes in there and can bring it. So,
dude, that's a testament to that show. That Contender Series, it is finding them. It is finding them.
Oh, you see Puna Haley Soriano with the KO in the opening bout on Saturday.
Puna, I know. I know Puna for a while because he's one of Ali management team. He was the management team, so I would work with him with that. But he another amazing fighter.
So I walked behind Ali on the way to T-Mobile the other day for like 10 minutes. He was in his sweats. He was, you know, he had that scowl on his face that said, I'll take you down if you look at me wrong. He's a thick dude, man. Is he in the gym 5 days a week? This guy's.
Yeah, he trains. He trains like a fighter, man. He trains like a fighter. He trains with his fighters. You know, Ali for the most part, he was my main training partner when I fought Sean Salmon. And at Jackson's, Ali was my main training partner for a while. And that's how we connected.
Because he's my main trainer partner. You ever put that head kick on Ali like you did, like you ruined Sean Salmon's
career? That's where I perfected it by doing it on him. It's like that story.
I gotta ask him on camera about that. I gotta get his take on that. Absolutely. Good night to fights. We got some news to check out as we roll forward. Just before we turn the microphones on here, this was a shocker to me. 30-year-old Rory McDonald, former Bellator welterweight champion, fresh off that somewhat bizarre, odd, slow loss to Douglas Lima in their rematch, very tactical bout, has signed a deal with PFL, Rashad, and will enter their $1 million welterweight tournament next year. Did not see this coming. Good move. What do you think?
Oh, man. I don't know if it's a good move. And here's why I don't know it's a good move. Because in this, the PFL, their whole model and the way they do it is tournament style. You know, so you're in the fire the whole time. And it's one of those things where, you know, it's a huge upside. And it's cool because you have seasons and you have some time off. But for the most part, you're in the fire. You're in the tournament. And
what do you got to fight 4 or 5 times in a year?
Four or five times a year. So it's a lot. It's a lot. And that's why I think that I'm not too sure about this move for Rory. I mean, you do have the huge financial side to win $1 million, and maybe he want to win $1 million and just work, you know, sail off into the sunset and be done. Maybe that's his plan. But the truth of the matter is he's going to have to fight a lot, and he's going to have to fight a lot of younger guys who, you know, are up and coming, who, you know, who are hungry, who don't really have a name. And those guys are the hardest guys to fight sometimes, just because of the fact that they don't know any better. You know what I'm saying? They don't know any better. And the fact that they're so green and they're up and coming and they have their eyes full of what the MMA world could be. They're not jaded yet. Like he's jaded, you know? And I just don't think that the PFL was probably the best move for him. I mean, it depends on how he if this is last year, I would say go PFL. But if not, competitively speaking, then I'm like, ooh, you should have went somewhere else.
You would have to assume he's getting – I don't know how the structure works. You win $1 million if you win the tournament, but he's getting probably paid handsomely on the side of that, you guess, right?
Yeah, so you get your regular fight contract. In your regular fight contract, you do like two or three fights. In those 2 or 3 fights, you have to qualify for the playoffs. You can qualify for playoffs with those 2 or 3 fights. So at those 2 or 3 fights, they're going to be at your regular pay, whatever your regular pay is. But then once you get to the payoff, the playoffs, then you're not going to get your regular pay every single time you fight. You're going to get like a playoff money, like, you know, playoff salary.
I mean, look, it's great name value for PFL, but I don't know, man. What we saw in the last few months, I just don't feel like he's going in the right direction. That the old Red King's still in there.
I just think right now for him, and this kind of proves it, like it with the PFL sign, it's a money grab, and he knows that it's short time, and his mindset of I want to be the best fighter in the world and all that kind of stuff, it's kind of like, you know, I'm gonna compete, I enjoy competing, but for the most part, I'm gonna make this money and spend time with my family.
Cannot hate him if that's the direction he wants to go. It's like weird. We know he's great, right? We've seen it. We saw him in UFC, but he's got a really sneaky great resume when you go back and look at it. You know, the wins over Diaz and Woodley. I mean, he's done some big things. Wins over Douglas Lima. On top of that, he's a classy guy too. Just don't know.
He really is. Yeah, he is. He is. He's very hard to read.
Yeah, you don't know when you talk to him whether he'd whether he might just accidentally carve you up in a second. You're just not really sure what's going to happen next. He's a very introspective dude there. Rashad, do you see all this nonsense, all this talk about Clarissa Shields wanting an MMA fight, wanting a 2-fight series with Amanda Nunes? She was at the UFC card this weekend. She's trying to make noise saying, I'll do an MMA fight as long as they are willing to sign for a boxing match against me. Ariel Helwani of ESPN just came out with a piece that said, forget that talk. She should be going after Kayla Harrison from the PFL. They're closer in weight, blah, blah, blah. I don't really care. I don't really see it.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, I think if Amanda Nunes would have had a fight where she just completely, you know, dominated GDR on her feet with the hands, then I think maybe having Kayla and Amanda fight on the UFC promotion, boxing promotion, that would make sense. You know, I think they can get a couple bites for that. I think that's a very interesting and intriguing matchup. But Clarissa, I mean, she came to MMA. That would be interesting as well too. But for the most part, I don't think people are woke enough on who Clarissa is in order to get really excited about her potential and what she can do to MMA.
I fully agree. I think it's a smaller payday and care level if she tried to cross over than she would realize. If she wanted to do look, Bellator will give you the right opponents. Bellator will match you up the right way. You want to go over there and try this crap out? You could probably fight somebody who's 0-2 and go have fun with it and maybe just stand up and knock them out. It'd be curiosity, but this ain't Maymac, Rashad. So there's no upside for Amanda Nunes other than hey, Clarissa, do you want to come over? I'll fight. You know, I'll defend my title against you in your debut. Outside of that, there's really no upside in doing anything like this.
I agree, 100%.
Also in the news this week, people going nuts that looks like our good friend Vitor Belfort, who signed with ONE, is he's in the gym, Rashad. I don't know if he's at the doctor's office too, but he's at the gym. And you remember Mohawk TRT Vitor from 2013, who was just spin kicking dudes to the next planet? That guy looks like he might be back. Please don't tell me that 40-year-old Rashad Evans, who's putting around the idea of a comeback, is considering going near that monster. Please, because I don't know if he'd pass a test on any planet right now.
Well, he trains at the same gym I train at.
Oh, so you've been seeing him?
Yeah, I've been seeing him. So, yeah, I've been seeing Vitor, and we've been training together, and he looks phenomenal. He absolutely looks phenomenal. He looks like – he actually looks better than he did back in the Scary Dimes, just because he's figured something out. It looks like he's figured something out. He comes to the gym. No lie, this guy comes in. He's there for 3 hours. He has a 3-hour routine that he does. He comes in there early before anyone gets in there, and then he's the last one to leave. So he does a good 3-hour routine. He comes about I think 2 or 3 times a week, and he does his 3-hour routine, and he looks phenomenal.
The guy looks like a million. He looks scary. He looks scary.
He does. We train together. He's pretty on point too.
If they want to line him up with a few tomato cans there, I'd be into that. I'd be finding the stream. I'd be tuning in there.
I didn't think he was gonna fight though for a while, because it seemed like he was just they just got him and acquired him, and they weren't doing anything with him. But now I see him getting ready. He's in prep mode. So maybe he has a date. Maybe he has an opponent. Maybe he has a time frame in mind when they expect him to have a fight.
Wild, wild stuff. I wanted to get your take on a story that broke out. We know that Conor's coming back against Cowboy Cerrone January 25th, UFC 246. Big news. Will be one of the bigger pay-per-views of the year. And by the way, has kind of a sneaky good undercard for a card that isn't loaded. It's got some names and fights I want to see. But Dana basically straight up admitted this past weekend that if Conor wins this welterweight bout, in which Dana said was booked that way so that Conor didn't have to cut back down to 155, the division that he's in, the division that he's the former champ in, the division that he wants a title shot in, that he would get the next shot at Khabib if Khabib beats Tony in April and if Conor beats Cowboy at welterweight. There's a lot of issues people have had with that, because one, Justin Gaethje, who is red hot fire, got passed up for Conor and now would seem to get passed up for a Khabib shot, or the winner of Khabib Tony, unless an immediate rematch was needed. Are you okay with this preferential treatment to a star who, if anyone would deserve it, I guess maybe him, for just saying, yeah, don't even worry about cutting to 55, bro. We just want you back. And if you win, yeah, sure. You get another title shot. That's no problem. You're the number one contender at 55. I don't care what weight you're in. This ain't cool.
No. And this is why. Listen, I get it. He's the superstar, and he can bring some big numbers, and you want to see him return back to the Conor of old. You know, you want to see him return back to days of grace. But here's a reality of the situation. You can't do that at the expense of the integrity of the sport, because once you do that, you ruin it for the people who really compete because they want to be the best. you know, and when you make it about a popularity contest and you make it about anything other than about going in there and proving that you're the best with your hands and your feet, then you ruin the sport. And it may not manifest in that one fight that we're speaking of, but it's the downward step to other downward steps that lead to the demise of the sport. You get what I'm saying? And
that's,
I know that
wrong.
Sounds a little extreme,
well,
but remember, what I'm saying is
Brock Lesnar almost got a title shot last year when he came back from a steroid test. So it's in line with that type of stuff. Yeah.
It ruins it. It ruins it because even on a couple of different cases, for one, as an athlete, I'm Justin Gaethje. I work my butt off to get to where I am, but then I get passed over because of a popularity contest. Now that jades me as a fighter, you know, and now I'm different on the inside because of that. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, that may be a good thing or maybe a bad thing for my career. Who knows? It all depends on how he internalizes that. But then you also have a fan who is a purist of it and just want to see the best guys compete. Then it ruins it for them because they're like, oh man, this isn't what I thought it was. This isn't the sport that I started to follow. This isn't about as real as it gets. This is about, you know, handpicking your guys and this guy wins. This is not the sport that I believe in anymore. So then you start losing fans in that respect. So
these are the times, Rashad, where I just wish Dana would go, look, guys, Conor's the biggest selling fighter in this promotion's history. It is what it is. And I think people would just go, yeah, I got issues with it, but he's not wrong. But instead, when he's just like, I don't see a problem. These are two lightweights fighting in a lightweight bout in which they don't have to make lightweight. It's no problem. It's like, well, how many other fighters, if you didn't force them to make weight in their division in which they have a tough weight cut, could look absolutely fantastic and work their way into title contention if you're just like, you know, yeah, it's crap.
It is crap. And the worst part about it is the fact that here's about it. You continue to spoil somebody who has had bad behavior. What do you think is going to happen? He's going to continue to be terrible. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to fix the behavior problem that you see, because you're showing them that, hey, despite no matter how you cut up, yeah, we still will bend the rules for you. You know what I'm saying? And that's the thing that kind of ruins it, you know?
I'm with you on that. I'm with you for sure. We got a couple fights to look at this weekend. There's a pair of Bellator bouts in Hawaii. I'm not going to say they're necessarily great. Bellator 235 on Friday night, a dual showing on Paramount Network and DAZN. Bellator 236 on Saturday night, streamed exclusively on DAZN. But I'll say this, Rashad. I love how they've marketed women's flyweight champion Alima Leigh McFarlane. She's like a national hero in Hawaii. We know for years Hawaii is this hotbed of rabid fans. I'm definitely going to tune in for that atmosphere when she defends Saturday night against Kate Jackson, because they've already proven that it matters when she's there in Hawaii.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to tune in too, because like you said, you know, she's an exciting fighter to watch. And, you know, The thing I like about what Bellator is doing, and they're going to Hawaii, and UFC hasn't been to Hawaii in a long time, and you know it's going to be interesting to see, you know, the environment there, because you know I went to a few undercard, I mean small shows there, and the fans there, they go absolutely bananas. It's packed for like super small shows because a lot of shows don't go there, and there really is nothing else to do on the island, so that's why they're also big fight fans. So I think Bellator is going to have a huge turnout for both days.
You know, I'm not ever into the idea of these back-to-back shows in the same city. It's like, can we just make one show and make it really good? But there's a couple of things worth looking at. Josh Barnett, former UFC heavyweight champion, will be making his Bellator debut. His first fight, Rashad, since 2016 in the UFC when he submitted Andre Arlovsky. Then he had the somewhat wrongful USADA suit that followed. He's going to main event against Ronnie Marks. It's amazing that this man is still fighting. It's amazing that he's only 42, Rashad. I feel like Josh Barnett's been in my MMA life for like three decades right now.
Yeah, no, that's pretty crazy. But he's one of those old goats that just stays around and found a way to do it, you know. But he's got a tough one against Ronnie Marks. I watched Ronnie Marks train at the Olympic the Performance Institute, and he's this past weekend, and he was looking really, really good. He was training with Glover Teixeira, so Teixeira has him looking really, really sharp. You know, big guy, huge legs. You know, and it's going to be an interesting matchup. I'll tell you that.
Absolutely, I'm a big fan. Do you know this women's flyweight Alejandra Lara? They call her Azul. She's got a fight against Veda Ortega on Friday night. She lost to Alima Leigh McFarland in the past for the flyweight title, trying to make a comeback for a rematch. She's marketable. She's a very good-looking lady, okay? I'm going to be cheering for her on Friday, all right? Brandon tells me to stop talking like that. But look, it's 2019, okay? People can talk about stuff like that, okay? So we'll shout out to Azul. We'll see her there. Also, the co-main on Saturday, featherweights AJ McKee and Derek Campos. Yeah. Can I have that, please?
Yeah.
This is part of that tournament, right? Both guys coming off of wins. That'll be a good-ass piece of business there. And we're only a week away from Fedor Rampage when Bellator and Rizin get together.
My boy, the ass-kicking machine. Jason Jackson is returning.
Against Kichi Kunimoto.
Yeah. The ass-kicking machine is back.
Every time you tell me to look out for somebody, they get a knockout win. So,
well, he almost beat Ed Ruth. He should have beat Ed Ruth last time.
Yeah, he dropped him a bunch of times.
He got robbed on that decision. So.
Absolutely. All right, this weekend, though, Saturday morning, Busan is the backdrop in South Korea for a UFC fight night. A pretty damn good main event. Brian Ortega is injured. He's out. But you're going to see Korean Zombie Chan Sung-jung and Frankie Edgar on short notice. Frankie Edgar was going to bantamweight. Now he's back here to save this card at 135. Supposedly he's supposed to fight Corey Sandhagen in a month at bantamweight. Bad idea, UFC. Can we just cancel that and see what happens here? Either way, Rashad, this is going to be a fight. This is going to be a damn fight Saturday morning.
It is, too. And this is the perfect Frankie to catch, too, because I always find that Frankie, you know, he works so hard, and sometimes by the end of his camp, he's done worked himself into a couple injuries just because of his work rate and how hard he goes. So having a short camp, having a short time to think about, you know, all the things that goes into a fight and everything like that, that is perfect for a guy like Frankie who's, you know, on the back half of his career and just looking to go out there and compete and have fun. Because this is what it's all about. If you can just only compete and have fun as an older guy, you would do it all the time. But it's all the training camp and the bumps and bruises that your body accumulates through training that makes you say, you know what, maybe I should sit my ass down some more. But now he's got a short camp, and he's got a fighter he can get up against. He's got a fighter who he can exploit because, you know, he has some holes. He has a lot of holes and a lot of holes that a very brilliant Mark Henry can exploit.
That's what I like about this fight. Very winnable, yet at the same time, hellaciously dangerous. A Korean Zombie comes for your soul, and that one-punch knockout in June of Hanato Moicano, or actually a couple knockdowns mixed in there and a bunch of flurries, that was vicious. So that was a big comeback win for Korean Zombie coming off that just bad luck loss in the final seconds to Yair Rodriguez the year before. This is interesting. This is very much an interesting fight. Korean Zombie's really only ever two wins out of a title picture because he's so marketable and fun. And for Frankie, it's like, what if he came here and won this? Does he stay at feather? You never really know. You know, you hope he doesn't take any damage. I just hope no matter what, they don't rush him back a month later to fight Sandhagen on another continent. Like, can we stop with old guys fighting twice in a month? Like, there's no, did we not learn a lesson with Michael Bisping, right? When he sold his soul to Kevin Gastelum that time?
Oh my goodness, I forgot all about that. Yeah, that was a bad one.
Either way, this is a fun ass fight, and it's going to be worth waking up for. Are you moved at all about this co-main event? You see a knockout coming when Volkan Ozdemir and Alexander Rakic get together, light heavyweights?
You know, I do. You know, because they got that same similar style. You know, and I feel as if like Volkan. You know, he wants to prove himself again. You know, he's still kind of on the recovery from that epic year that he had. You know, that epic whirlwind year where you saw him going title for the fight for the title, and
knocking
then he had that year where things
in
his way, and now he's kind of rebuilding, making everything okay. You know, now I'm back here. Now I'm back in Europe. You know, and getting used to his whole flow and everything over there. So I think I look forward to seeing, you know, how Volkan has changed his game around and adapted to his the newness of everything he's experienced in his last year.
Absolutely. That's going to be an interesting fight. The only other fight I'm of really of note that I care about is Doohoo Choi is back, Rashad. The Korean Superboy. Love me some of this guy. We haven't seen him, though, since January of 2018. You'll remember that fight of the year loss to Cub Swanson. He comes back almost basically a year and a half later, gets knocked out by Jeremy Stephens in a war. Then we haven't seen him in almost 2 years. He's going to come back against Charles Jourdain. He's only 28 years old, but can he put it together? Because his first couple fights when he came in the UFC, it was like, damn, this guy's going to be something special.
I think he can put it together. And I think the fact that he's been off for 2 years, it has, you know, should give a peek inside of that. Because, you know, a lot of times when guys are off and they've had those battles that we've seen him in, you know, they go back and they work on things, go back to the drawing board and kind of tighten up their technique. And I like to believe that, you know, Superboy has went and done that. But like I said, it remains to be seen. So it's interesting, you know, and it'll be good to see him to get in his groove and get in his rhythm and just kind of see if we can get more of those exciting fights from him.
I love this guy because he's either going to knock you out or I mean, I don't want to say there's a stereotype of Asian fighters in both sports that they'll go for it, but they'll go for it. Rashad in Korean Superboy, as we saw against Cub Swanson, will friggin' not go away. So it's wild. If he gets into a war at any point, he's going to empty out the jug to try to win that. And that's scary and humbling and fun to watch and wild. So it could lift him to the top. It could get him into some trouble. You never know there. But big fan of that guy. That'll wrap up the MMA portion of this week. Rashad, I gotta check your pulse here. All right, it's holiday season coming up, Christmas around the corner. But Friday, December 20th, Star Wars, Episode 9. The Rise of Skywalker. Are you in? Are you fired up? Do you get down like that?
Oh, I get down like that. I'm a big Star Wars fan. I'm a huge Star Wars fan. Been that way since I was a kid. So it's interesting. The Star Wars world is pretty interesting. The Mandalorian came out on Netflix. It's a good series. So a lot of interesting things are happening in the Star Wars world.
Now, what's your plan? Are you going to be an opening night guy? Are you going to wait to hear the buzz and check in over, you know, a couple days later? How in tune are you with this film coming out? Are you like?
I'm an opening night guy. I'm going to see it opening night just because of the fact that I know some really big Star Wars fans. So I'm not going to get the chance to, you know, hear about, they'll mess around and tell me the whole thing if I don't get a chance to see it right away.
Colby Covington will straight up spoil the ending. You got to be careful. All right. He's done that before. Do you have any hopes, predictions, who is Rey's parents? What are we going to find out? Is this the last one? What's going to happen here? It can't be the last one.
It can't be the last one. I mean, Disney has it. They're not letting this baby go.
All right. I don't think Kylo's coming out of this in one piece. All right.
No, Kylo's done. I think he's going to get get banged up.
Yeah, he fights way too emotional. Do you have any feelings about this grudge match war rematch we're going to see Saturday on Fox in the boxing realm? Jermell Charlo, Tony Harrison for the junior middleweight title. You know about this beef back and forth they got going on? It's wild.
I seen a bit of it. I didn't really get into it, but it's a beef. Like,
yeah, it goes back to their disputed fight last December when Harrison won. You know, one of those decisions, you're like, did he really? I don't know. But, dude, those Charlos can – they're like, I feel like the Charlo brothers just need somebody to piss them off, and then they come out and they knock fools out. And they got it here because Charlo's accusing Harrison of ducking out when they canceled the rematch 6 months ago, that he got knocked out in sparring, that he was afraid. Like, this is like – tune in to see some emotion. I love when fights have emotion in it.
I love it too, and especially real emotion too. And that was the difference in between Colby's fight and a fight like this, because, you know, with Charlotte, he can dig and kind of find things that say things that really poke at the spirit of his opponent. You know what I'm saying? You know, missing a fight, dodging me, that really pokes at you. But what Colby was saying, you know, it doesn't really poke at you because it doesn't hit on anything real. You know what I'm saying? When you hit on something real, that's when you draw out the emotion. So that's what I think this fight's going to be, an emotional fight, because it drew on something real.
Absolutely. As we turn the corner here, I know you're a big boxing guy. Do you have any early feelings on Fury Wilder too? Fury just changed his trainer. Mm-hmm. You know, we got into that in the boxing show this week. What are you doing 2 months out from the biggest fight in your career? Just dumping your trainer. I don't know what's going on here, Rashad.
I think Ferry's doing a little too much, man. I wish that he wouldn't, because he's so dang talented. But I say he's doing too much because you have the wrestling, you have the whole MMA talks, and you have everything else that he appears to be doing. And then again, this can just be, you know, smokescreen that he's given us, right? You know, he could be on a low training the best that he ever, or be more focused than he's ever been. But as it appears on the outside, it appears that he's just, you know, he's fragmented in his thought. He's fragmented on what he wants to do. And he knows that he's the hotness right now, but he doesn't know how to divert that attention and really, you know, put it to the right area. And that's the problem. That's where that's when things tend to fall apart, when you don't kind of know where to put the hand, you know, that you're dealt. You don't know how to play it. And I feel like he needs to slow down a little bit, you know, and changing your trainer. Oh man, that's a tough one.
It's weird because the trainer he had the 25-year-old trainer Ben Davison, the guy who helped him in his comeback, and that guy gave weird cryptic comments like, "We've come to a mutual decision that we have decided," like, you know, just all like kind of fake wording, and you're like, "What really happened here?" And then, you know, Fury's a guy who, like, I mean, he'd been through a lot of stuff. You know, you hope he doesn't fall off any kind of wagons, and one mistake as it is will get you sent to hell against Wilder. So I just want that guy, Fury, in his best shape, ready to go come February 22nd. It's wild. Now you got Anthony Joshua saying, I'll come train with you to help you beat Wilder because I want to fight you so bad. I don't get that, but hey, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah.
I mean, honestly speaking, I think that Fury is the best boxer. He is the best boxer in the weight class.
That power, though.
Just
that
boxing, power. The boxing alone, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think that he's a better boxer than Wilder, but it's just that I have never seen another human being with that kind of power. Like, it is different than Mike Tyson power. You know what I'm saying? It's on the same, you know, same path, but it's different. It's more disruptive. It's more violent. It's more just like, it's more raw. It's raw.
Yeah,
and
it
it's
is.
Just like when he hit Ortiz, it looked like his brains got blew out. But it got, you know, it looked bad.
It's like everybody's like, you know, everyone spends too much time saying Wilder's not this, Wilder's not that. The fact that he's a one-hit wonder, the fact that he's like, he could lose 7 or 8 rounds and then just knock you out is like the most entertaining element of this division. So it's like, I don't necessarily want Wilder to be this complete animal force. Like, it's more fun when he's going to go in there against Fury, probably be down 8-1, and then have a shot to end it at any point. You know, it's going to be great. Can't wait. Lot of good stuff to come, man. We got Star Wars. We got the holidays. Enjoy. Rashad Evans, thank you for joining us. People should follow you on the social medias at Sugar Rashad, correct?
Yes, sir. Sugar Rashad.
There it is. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, wherever you're going this holiday season, Rashad, all right?
Thank you, BC. I especially appreciate the happy Kwanzaa.
Best to you and the family. Best to all our listeners. We'll be back at some point with our end of year awards, look ahead, 2020 thoughts. But for Brandon Wise, who's off this week, Sugar, Rashad Evans, it's your boy BC signing off. Follow us at State of Combat. Hit us up with that 5-star review. But until then, we got 2 words for you. We out.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.